maybe you...
Well, the problem with the AAAS was the conferences were interested in the AAAS as a money backer, and the AAAS was not interested in providing money for the conferences.
Were those AICHE conferences similar in format?
Yeah, yeah, they were copies. I said AICHE, I'm not sure it wasn't the engineering. What's a general engineering society?
There's an United Engineering Foundation. Or...
No, that doesn't sound right. It was an engineering group, mm-hmm. I know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can look into that.
Yeah.
you went a couple of times, and then did you go back every year? How did you...
Yeah, I was there just about every year, all through the 50s and most of the 60s.
Mm-hmm. You know, you got a lot of other things going on by the...
Yeah, but I would use this, I'd drive my family to Baltimore, where I come from, drop my wife and kids there, and then I'd just go up to New Hampshire. Of course, I was one of the vigorous opponents of families. I couldn't afford to bring them up there. But, it was almost every year, I know.
Now, at some point in the mid-50s, Gordon Research Conference is incorporated as an actual nonprofit.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, was that kind of a noticeable event?
Not to the users.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that formality was important because they were handling enough money so that the feds were interested.
Mm-hmm. Were you, the business in the 50s and 60s of kind of what to have conferences on, and it was self-evident there should be a continuing corrosion conference, mm-hmm. I guess.
No, there were discussions. Now I'm jumping forward to my board experience. There were discussions as to which ones we should drop, which ones should go on alternate years. In the case of corrosion, we did the alternate years by wet and dry. So there were two really different conferences. People who came in the wet years didn't come in the dry years. And vice versa.
So was there a significant industrial attendance difference between those?
Yeah, very different.
Which way did it happen?
Well, the people doing high temperature work were interested in the dry stuff. The others, the ambient temperature was generally wet. They're all fluid, but some was condensed, some wasn't.
How did the industrial involvement begin to change, and why?
If you look at what's happened in the last few years, you can see an extrapolatable system. The interest of the industry, which peaked in the 50s and 60s, in interest in research peaked in the 50s and 60s, began to diminish rather rapidly in the 70s when it became evident that you couldn't make a direct connection between an outcome and the research that preceded it. That it was a very convoluted path that got you to the outcome. And I guess people decided if it's so convoluted, it must may not even exist. So why are we spending 10 to the 6 bucks on research laboratories? And now 10 to the 8 or 10 to the 9 bucks. So we'll cut them out. And they've cut them out. There aren't... General Electric probably still has some kind of a lab, but I don't think anybody else does. Not many others do. DuPont certainly doesn't have the same kind of lab it once had. And the American cyanamides and the whatnots are all gone. I don't think Dow has the same kind of lab it used to have. It used to have a 350, 400 person relatively pure research lab where people did what they wanted to do and somebody learned how to fit what they found to Dow's principal occupation, i.e. making money. They don't do that anymore. I think they outsource it to the universities somehow.
Then, I mean, but the, in that very point, the interface of academic-industrial becomes even more important,
yeah.
Right?
Well,
it seems like this was...
As an extracting device, it becomes more important, yeah, sure. In fact, one of the reasons, one of the last reasons for maintaining research laboratories in large companies was to have people who could understand what was going on and do the extracting.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have to do the research themselves. That doesn't work either. The academic institutions aren't a good source of the kind of research that the companies need. They're a good source of the start of the long stream that becomes a technology. It starts up here in the mountains where a little stream jumps around and goes this way and that way and the other way. And you got to be down where the river is fairly straight before you can use it technologically. And the interim is what's missing, seriously missing. And in the 50s and 60s, in the golden years of science, the companies put money into the top part of the system, big money, and it didn't pay off. Notably, the accountants couldn't relate it to the outcomes. That's the problem. So they've all disappeared. The system goes on. How it goes on is not quite so clear.
Well, there's a very considerable concern today in the classic chemical industry about the lack of innovation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the industry squelched the innovation, the in-house innovation.
Well, one of the interesting things about the university academic and industry kind of divide or stream, as you're just depicting it, is a lot of times it's not so much just products, but new methods that come out of the universities.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much of the conferences was about sort of methods of doing research versus talk of specific
what the outcome really was. I don't think very much. I think it was, you know, what do we know that's different?
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly true in the... I actually attended about 5 different conferences, and that's the way it was in those 5.
Mm-hmm.
I never went to hydrocarbon, or I went to catalysis, but not hydrocarbon, things of that sort.
And those were each sort of 3 to 5 days long? How long?
5 days.
5 days.
Come in on Sunday night and leave Friday after lunch.
Was there, if you think about hydrocarbon or catalysis as opposed to corrosion, was there a very different kind of ethos in the room? Mm-hmm. Was it different?
No, they were about the same. The ones I went to had roughly the same formatting. Somebody would say something, somebody would ask a question, somebody would say that's wrong, somebody would make a comment. It was very much a round table discussion with 50 people, which is not easy.
That's an art form, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an art, and it's gone. It does not exist anymore.
But it became enculturated for a while.
For a while.
In the 50s, what were the ratios of academics and industrial people in the room?
Not far from half, with the industrials being lesser, but not far from half. And it got smaller and smaller, with even the time I was there, which ran to about 1970. Although I chaired an electrochemistry one in the 80s, I think, sometime.
Mm-hmm. Did the board, when you were on the board, did you worry about this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a major problem. We had money problems, but the major problem is, you know, what's the future of this outfit? Since the number of industrial people was diminishing slowly, the openness was diminishing rapidly, and it was becoming a lecture series rather than a discussion. And I think they have that problem big now. I'm guessing, because I haven't been involved with it.
What sorts of things were you trying then to adjust that balance or to kind of change things around?
Well, we'd root around and ask the Dalles and the Carbides, why don't you send more people around?
Mm-hmm. But, and their responses?
Well, think about it. More or less.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were beginning to get the feeling that they didn't need their science establishment.
That they could pick it off the shelf.
They could find it some other way, yeah.
Yeah.
And they may not be wrong, as a matter of fact, but they... That's why I spoke of the golden age in the 50s, 60s. Those research laboratories were big.
Mm-hmm.
And they used up a lot of output, university output. A similar thing is happening with the pharmaceutical industry now. What's different is that the pharmaceutical industry is just trying to get new compounds with characteristic properties.
Right.
They're not, none of them are doing research on how you do this. They get that from the university guys. They know what they want because it has this kind of folding, unfolding characteristic or whatever it is. And they call on guys like Stoddard at UCLA, this is what we want, how would you make it? And he tells them.
Yeah, I mean, their end of pipeline product is always the same. It's a medicine.
It's
pills,
yeah,
an injection,
it's,
whatever.
Right.
The end of pipeline product for Dow can be anything from a fabric to,
yeah,
you know, a huge array, right?
Mm-hmm. Or Agent Orange.
Right.
So it's quite different now. And that's probably one of the reasons that the number of people going in for PhDs in chemistry is diminishing.
Well, the number one employer of chemistry degrees
is
pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
Now, was there a kind of a push to take note of that and move into a medicinal area a little more?
In
GRC?
Yeah, I'm sure that you find some of these
older
titles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't see any offhand here. Microbial deterioration. Now, that's a materials problem. I don't see anything here. 62.
Now you were on the.
This is just the 52.
Yeah, these are just older ones. So, yeah. You were on the board right at a time when Parks was stepping down and Cruickshank was kind of taking over a bit more. What can you tell me about Parks in terms of what he was like as a person?
Well, the system was failing, and he was pretty defensive about it.
Mm-hmm.
he probably was the cause of it. I don't know. I mean, you got to start with the chief and work down. Cruikshank was his assistant.
Right. From about 47 on, right?
Yeah. And he stopped the leakage. That's the best I can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Brother Parks didn't pay attention to the activity or didn't think about it very much. I don't know. But Alex was able to fix it in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my term, that thing appeared and disappeared. And they haven't had any trouble since. Cruikshank stayed on for a long time.
Yeah.
I think they've had a couple of threes since he left.
He was on until 93, and it's been Carlisle Storm ever since.
Has he been there since?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He still is. Yeah. Now, Parks brought a lawsuit against GRC at one point.
Yeah. There was strife. Everybody pointed fingers at everybody else. I'm not sure the money was well accounted for one thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember whether they had a formal accounting firm working for us or not.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to guess, I'd say no. Of course, this was an academic affair,
mm-hmm.
run by academics, and it had the looseness of the way academics manage things. And that meant that Parks was in full charge. The board probably didn't say much.
Right.
But when it became evident that there wasn't enough money to run, then the board woke up. And we're lucky, because Cruikshank was an important character in the GRC.
No, I mean, if the institutions, I mean, I hate to use these words, but all but bankrupt circa 1970, and Cruikshank steps in, who does he turn to?
Well, first he stops the leakage, whatever it is. The conferences were well established up in New England, and they had some in Wisconsin, I think, at the time,
mm-hmm.
or someplace a little west.
Mm-hmm.
So what they probably did was run the conference up to 110 instead of 85, and got a little dough to plug the leak. My guess is that's what they did for about two or three years.
Right.
I know we complained about the increased numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no way around them because you had to have the money. Going to industry would not have done it. They were not that interested to just put dough up to keep it running.
Right.
I don't think they felt that they were getting enough out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is they did it by increasing the size. And that in turn affected the quality. Diminished the quality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have several hundred of these currently each year.
Yeah.
And they are bringing people in, so that somebody must like it. I don't think it's just a matter of being used to it. And I shouldn't really comment on the more recent ones because I haven't been to in the last 10 years or so.
As it started growing in the early 70s, would they sort of institute smaller breakout sessions or were people
not formal
on their own?
They did it on their own, yeah.
Right.
Which is a good way to do it. It was informal and means that people of like interest got together.
Right.
Again, I'm talking now about corrosion.
Mm-hmm.
But I would guess it was the same with the other stuff, too.
Right.
The current GRC is probably, except superficially, not the same as the one I went to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
That was purely driven by the interest of the 4 or 5 dozen people around.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm sure it's much more formalized. As I already said twice, I'd be very surprised if everybody participates in terms of saying something. And I would have to extrapolate that they shouldn't exist too long, much longer. But the fact is they do, and they seem to be prospering at the present time.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a period of rapid growth of
that, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In terms of the number of conferences. And as I understand it, I mean, they follow the same mode of allowing people to propose new ideas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
New areas.
Yeah, they do that.
Now, in the corrosion, which you're most familiar with, to what extent would you, in the conversations during the meetings, kind of map out subfields, like, you know, here's an area that nobody's really done anything on, let's go into it?
What we generally would do, 1 or 2 afternoons during the session, the senior guys would get together and sort of map out what the next conference should consider.
Mm-hmm.
The next conference might be 2 years away because we have this alternate mm-hmm. system.
Mm-hmm.
And then we try to identify some younger guy who would be capable of handling the conference, and then put him in a corner and see if he wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then start on the work with the understanding that in 2 years there could be some major shift, some real change in direction,
right,
which had to be watched for. That's about the way around. Fairly informally.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always put it in the hands of the seniors, which is not necessarily the best way to get innovative stuff to them, but it's anyway.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, did you have a sense coming out of some of the meetings, you know, God, this is exciting, I should change my research direction, you know, I should start working
absolutely
on...
Absolutely, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I guess the best example of that is the first time I heard about a good solid state, solid state electronic potential step.
Mm-hmm.
Where you could reliably set the potential and keep it from ringing. Because one of our big problems in trying to do electrochemistry is to maintain that constant potential.
Mm-hmm.
Not constant on a voltmeter, which was insufficiently sensitive to see the ring. Because that potential bar was very important, and in fact was the reason that a lot of these things took place and we didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer was, yeah, now I can go back to my passivity studies.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good potential stats, I guess, were somewhere between 55 and 65. And my first introduction to that was at a Gordon conference. I can't remember any other time that I made a change.
And then, I mean, you'd also kind of have a list of people you could talk to about it outside
yeah,
of it, right?
Yeah, and people who had the capacity to tell you something about good electronic systems.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I Actually, there are a lot of smaller things you take away, you know, little tips of how best to use a probe, what means could you, what kind of system could you use that minimized the resistance path? Was it really possible to hold the probe electrode within a micron of a solid surface without any motion at all? That kind of thing. In fact, I guess you get lots of tips on how to do experiments just by sitting around talking to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a great, you know, a great outcome from the Gordon Conference. Get right down to it, maybe that this small group talk was a lot more important than the big group, when it was handled well, and the discussion flowed around, used to turn up lots of little nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure of that. I get the question now is, suppose the Gordon Conference has disappeared overnight, would it make much difference to the scientific community? How much of a white water would there be? With the change in the way people transfer understanding,
mm-hmm.
with the use of the web, for example,
mm-hmm.
you might be able to get away without a noticeable change.
Well, tell me something. Circa, you know, I mean, from 1950 through the mid-70s, when you're really kind of deeply involved in it,
mm-hmm.
you can make the argument that people transfer findings through publications.
Yeah. They did, but it was always a year late.
Mm-hmm.
Took a year to get a paper out, at best. So if you wanted to be on the real forefront, you had to talk to people who were doing it. Now that's not true.